ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, the rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated, but people, please brush your teeth. On that note, how you doing, James?
Well, not too bad, not too bad. I'm glad you were able to join us this morning. I'm looking forward to chatting a little bit of TFC with you.
James Grazi, of course, joining us up from the training ground where he covered this morning TFC training for the opening of their camp. James, there was a bit of news out of TFC camp today. A player that we both seen play, a young guy, Rocco Romeo, he has been signed as the 21st homegrown player for TFC. Can you let the listeners know a little bit about Rocco?
Yeah, Rocco is sort of the prototypical center back when you look at the physique that he brings to the position. He's a big, tall boy, very rangy, reads the game relatively well. He rejoined TFC after a loan stint in Denmark last year that really saw him mature sort of both on the field and off the field. I think like me, you first spotted him back with the Canada U15s when he was getting sent off against Honduras. So, you know, watching a young man find his way in the professional game and earn himself a professional contract with his hometown club is pretty cool. He's going to be pretty down the depth chart, but with the loss of Drew Moore, I think that was a position that TFC sort of needed to add somebody to, and it'll be interesting to see how he factors in with the team. You know, as you tweeted, I think we expect to see him more with TFC 2 this year than with the first team, but just having that little bit of faith in the player by giving him this contract is a mark of what TFC see in his future. And just as a bit of a funny side note, I remember covering the MLS Cup parade back in 2017, I suppose it was. And there was this rather hip-looking kid sort of roaming the streets, taking pictures with his camera and soaking in the moment. And I recognized him and I walked over and said hello. And it was Rocco sort of as an academy player, just enjoying what was the biggest moment in the club that he would sign for a couple of short years later.
Fair enough. Rocco once DM'd me to thank me for kind words I said. So he's a very polite young man as well. So for what that's worth, we'll take that for what it's worth. But I guess we should move on to the news of the day, the news of yesterday. That would be Michael Bradley and his sudden need for surgery, which is taking place today for what I believe is a high ankle sprain that happened during MLS Cup. A lot of people are quick to judge. I think we should start this conversation by saying that no one on this phone is a doctor. So we do not have the qualifications to completely understand what's happening. But I guess what is happening? Is this something that people are suspicious of at the camp other than Josie? Or is that Josie sounding off and this was just one of those medical things that they couldn't have predicted?
Well, leaving Josie to the side, just because I'm never quite sure what to make of his pronouncements. We don't believe it's a high ankle sprain. We haven't gotten an official word sort of on what the injury is being called. But as it was explained to us, and the reason this all came about so late was that Toronto knew that he had suffered an ankle injury, and there was a standard ankle sprain, the sort of thing that sort of gets better by itself, especially when you're entering the off season and you have a couple of months to not worry about it. And as Michael embarked on his own preparations for this season coming up, there was something that there was like a little nagging bit that wouldn't go away. And the way Greg Vanney explained it to us yesterday was that, you know, you're about 95% right. Everything's feeling good. And, you know, the ankle sprain that was initially diagnosed had cleared up for the most part, but there was just this little tiny little bit that wasn't feeling right. And he actually related it to an injury that his daughter, who's a gymnast, had. And it, again, we don't have the exact diagnosis, but it was something about a contact injury somewhere in the soft tissues underneath the leg. So if you look at the play in question where it happened, Roman Torres tries to get his foot on the ball and he sort of catches the underside of Michael's boot, and you see a pretty vicious sort of twist in Michael's ankle. And so our understanding is that there's something internal to the, again, I'm not a doctor, so I couldn't tell you what's going on, but there was something in there that was damaged that the surgery has to go in and repair before the regular course of healing is allowed to take part. So in terms of the whole hubbub about whether there was a misdiagnosis or why it happened to here, I think it was, again, the way that Vanny explained it with his experience with his daughter was that it's not something that shows up easily on the scan. And so when Michael was recovering and he was feeling better and everything seemed on track, there was no need to go back and look further at things. And just in the last couple of days when it was realized that he wasn't getting over that last 5% and something else was going on, did they go back and look further? And I think part of the reason that we're not getting a very specific diagnosis is that they're not even, I don't want to get too far over my skis here, but I don't know that they know exactly what the problem is at the moment. And so we'll get an update soon, hopefully, on exactly what's going on and exactly what his timeline is. And it's definitely frustrating that you know, your captain won't be available for the side when the season starts out, but it's sort of something that happens in injuries. The human body isn't, you can't set your clock to it. You can't make a schedule by it. It doesn't care when the season starts. So the things come up when they come up. And I think Josie's frustration, you know, the club just learned about this news 2 days prior to revealing it publicly to us yesterday. And I think Josie said that he just learned about it the day before. So there's a lot of emotion in terms of you're getting the band back together and looking forward to going one better than you did last season. And you sort of get this curveball. And in some ways, it's natural to sort of lash out, and we'll sort of see where all that goes. But it definitely provided a little bit of fire at what we all anticipated was going to be a pretty quiet opening day to camp.
Now, James, with the comments of Josie, of course, following Michael Bradley's injury, with Josie's injuries over the last couple of years and his reaction and his own trainers taking care of himself when he gets injured, people have been looking at this and trying to find correlations between the injuries of Altidore, the mismanagement of how Josie was injured for the last couple of years, and this year. Is there any coincidences? Is it just happenstance of both these players and injury mismanagement? And it could be like totally isolated incident. Or does people with their conspiracy glasses see something that is actually there? Is there a position in Toronto right now, probably in the medical staff or something, that is not giving the players the confidence that players usually do need facing a medical staff and their own team? Is there something to it, or is just pure coincidence and people like to see things where there's none?
I'm really probably not qualified to give a really good answer to that question. I think the way that I think about these things is that you have to break the injuries down into two separate classes, right? You have the contact injuries, and this Michael one is a contact injury. It came from a play in the game where this player suffered an interaction with another player, and it's not the sort of thing that happens when you're running or when you're doing your regular soccer activities per se. And if you look at Josie's injury that saw him miss out on the playoffs, that too was a contact injury. It was a function of a tackle that went in sort of late and resulted in him landing awkwardly. And the same with his 2017 MLS Cup foot injury. It was another bit of contact with a player that led to the injury. So I view those as one class of injury, and those are the sort of, you know, the rough and tumble of the game causes injuries, and that's something that, you know, you can prepare for it as best you can. You can hope that the rest of the body system is supported in the ways that it needs to be able to survive those occasional impacts. But that's sort of what happens. I think the second class that you have to look at is the muscle strains and the injuries that tend to come more of a result of specific fatigue rather than actual points of contact that cause damage, which results in the injury. And so I think if you split those two down, it's hard to see a real pattern in terms of which injuries have been the result of which thing. You know, there's been the sort of the long-running joke about quads and hamstrings at TFC and whether there was something wrong with the training, and I'm just not really in a position to add anything to that conversation other than if you lump all the injuries together, it looks bad, but when you start separating them out into things that happen naturally in the course of playing the games and things that are the results of, you know, overtraining or not monitoring or anything like that, it's to me, it's more sort of something that we talk about behind the scenes and wonder rather than a, you know, an actual case to be prosecuted. The one thing I would add to that is that, you know, in the last couple of years, TFC has done a lot in terms of monitoring their players, in terms of workload and in terms of strain, and trying to keep a better track in terms of who's in a potential position to get injured because of fatigue. And so it's definitely something that they're paying attention to and always looking to get better at. But, you know, you're never going to win an argument on Twitter. So I can just stay clear of that as best I can.
Yeah, winning argument is way overrated anyways. Like, sometimes just back down. Don't even try to win the argument. Settle down, sit down, and you'll see life is a lot more peaceful that way. James, when we're looking at Toronto's training camp, what's next for Toronto? Where are they going to train? And what's the next couple of important days for Toronto FC?
Yeah, well, they started out here in Toronto on Friday with the sort of, you know, pre-official kickoff of the camp medicals and everyone arriving into town and such. And they opened the camp properly on Monday yesterday, and they got a couple of days here in town before they head down to Florida, where they'll be for about 9 or 10 days before returning back here for about a week. And then they head down to California. And it's when they're in California that I think things will get serious and they start having a series of friendlies. I think they're playing the Galaxy and the Rapids and a couple other teams several times in anticipation of that February 29th opener against the San Jose Earthquakes. The camp makeup is pretty interesting at this time of year. It's they run a pretty big squad. I think there's about 40 people in the group between TFC, TFC2, a couple of academy guys, and the draft picks are all sort of the Danish fellow Weaver and the Toronto-based guy, I'm blanking on his name right now, are both actually here right now, whereas the other two will meet up with them down in Florida in the coming days. And between those guys, TFC2 guys, you know, the two goalkeepers that they just signed to TFC2, Kevin Silva and Eric Klonowski, it's a pretty big group out there on the crowd. I think, you know, it was sort of lost in the, oh, who's that guy? Who's this guy? What's going on here? That it was noticed that Michael Bradley wasn't out there yesterday, but nobody really thought too much about it. So, you know, these are fun days. There's a big group. The guys are, you know, doing the rope swings and medicine balls and punching bags and all that sort of physical stuff to make sure they're ready for the burden that's going to be placed on them as the season approaches.
James, you were there, of course, in 2016 as well. Coming off of the 2016 loss, they're coming off another loss in MLS Cup final this time. They talk a lot about how that the loss in 16 drove them to reach higher heights. Is there any comparison to this group now in your mind to that group, or was that group just so talented that, you know, whatever motivation they wanted to aspire to, it was just really about the talent?
Yeah, you know, we haven't gotten in a lot to sort of the motivations for this year. I think that Bradley news yesterday sort of derailed whatever plans we sort of had, and we're still sort of at such an early phase that the games are so far away that it's really hard to tell. What I would say is that, you know, given the nature of this group and the number of guys who have sort of been there and done that, and the chip that a lot of them play with on their shoulders, even now having had the successful careers that they've had, you know, when the CONCACAF Champions League disappointment came about, that was very much something that reminded me a little bit of the MLS Cup disappointment the year and a half prior, in terms of being something that definitely became a goal in front of this group. And, you know, despite nobody particularly having said it yet, the fact that they lost another final to Seattle, and Seattle has that best of three advantage over them, after these three MLS Cup finals, will no doubt be something that they have in mind. And I think the really fascinating thing to watch this year is going to be, we haven't seen a lot of change. It's been a super quiet offseason for this group. You know, Rocco was announced today, a couple of draft picks, Bradley getting re-signed. We haven't really seen any additions. Saw a couple of departures, you know, Ashton Morgan, Ryan Telfer, Drew Moore. And it's going to be very much the group that played last year and seemed to really find something that worked for them towards the latter stages of the year. And so how they sort of, you know, turn the page on the calendar, but continue to build on the momentum that they saw through the final months of last year and the postseason will be definitely something to watch. You know, we saw how that 2017 TFC team sort of, you know, took the league by storm and put up record numbers, and you know, they might be without Michael Bradley, but you know, that's not the worst thing in the world when you see a guy like Liam Fraser who's super hungry to get a chance, and you see a guy like Noble Akello who's ready to sort of get his feet wet at this level. And, you know, then you get Michael Bradley injected into the team midseason, and there's still that open DP spot, depending on how it is that they choose to pursue that option. But it's all shaping up pretty nicely for them. We didn't get a chance to interact with too many guys yesterday. We just talked to Altidore and Pozuelo and as I said, the Bradley news sort of took all the oxygen out of the air. But there was a quiet confidence and a little bit of a relaxed nature. The guys looked pretty happy to be back at work yesterday, and I think as we build towards the season, that's only going to increase.
You mentioned James Okello. You mentioned Fraser. Those are two guys, young guys, that everyone sort of anticipated might take advantage of Bradley being out for a little while. I'm wondering whether that's your take, or whether, you know, a guy like Delgado, who had a good second half of the season, would be more in line to fill those minutes up in your mind.
I think for now, like just like, you know, 24 hours after finding out what's going to happen and without having seen how things go the next little while, I think for now it's Liam's position to take. You know, we've seen him fill in those shoes with Michael. We've seen him play there with the national team and do incredibly well against the Americans at BMO Field, his home pitch. And he's more of an athlete in that position than Markey is. I think the real question is going to be, how does that rest of the midfield sort of shape out there? You know, Liam excelled with Canada, having Sam Piet beside him and playing in that double pivot, and whether he's ready to take on that full responsibility that Michael bears, being a one in that position, or whether Markey lines up beside him, or whether Oso is there and he's tasked with more of a defensive role, and then, you know, how Pozuelo fits into that whole mix. It's going to be a... Then he was pretty adamant that there would not be a formation change as a result of losing Bradley, so we're expecting something in that 4-3-3 mold with two wingers as well. So how that all shakes out over the coming weeks will be pretty interesting, but I think right now, if they were to play a game tomorrow, I'd expect Liam Fraser to be filling those boots.
Fair enough. Now, the other topic of conversation prior to the Bradley injury was, of course, the DP slot that is open. No one does not think that TFC is not going to use that spot. They will. The debate, of course, is whether they wait till summer or whether they try and fast track that now. We all understand the complications to bringing in a guy now. We saw it last year in a very amusing but nonetheless frustrating play out from Pozuelo. You think they wait till the summer and just see what they need, or is this they need to bring someone in now? And what kind of player do you think they'll bring in?
Yeah, it's another one of those tough ones that sort of we're hearing two different sort of modes of thought on that. You know, Ali Curtis spoke yesterday, and he was sort of and perhaps this was a negotiating thing. He didn't want to commit to going through the whole circus that they went through with Pozuelo last year, and sort of explained how difficult it is to pry a quality player away from his team in the middle of the season. And, let alone the fact that we don't exactly know how the CBA is going to play out and what sort of restrictions, how the whole designated player rule is going to be shaped in the years going forward. So how that factors into your long-term planning that a club needs to make. So Ali was sort of leaving the door open to maybe the midseason one is the right one, and maybe the play is to see what you have and then see what you need and go forward from there. And, you know, about an hour later, Greg Vanney spoke, and he was pretty adamant that he wants to get that player in right away. He wants to have that player with the team from the start of the season, because sometimes it takes those first couple of months to really adjust to your environment, not just a new city, but a new team and a new league and however that all works out. And so I think it's going to be one of those wait-and-see situations. I like to try to not read people's minds too much when it comes to this sort of thing, because, you know, that removes the surprise when you get that email in the inbox. But I could definitely see it going either way. And I think what I would say is that they're pretty happy with the group that they have here. They spent a lot of last year doing a rebuild before they thought they would need to do a real rebuild with the departures of Sebastian Jovinko and Victor Vasquez. And so I think they answered a lot of the questions that they had with this group throughout the course of last season. And yes, you lose Drew Moore, so maybe you need to fill somebody in that spot. And the Rocco signing makes a lot of sense internally in that position in terms of building some more depth. You know, Ashton Morgan seems to not be returning to the club, and so, you know, is there space at a left back position? You decide not to exercise your option on Nico Benezé, so does that open up a wide spot? And then whether those are the places where you see value in terms of using a designated player spot, or whether that's somewhere where you look to reinforce internally. I still think that we're looking at somebody in the mold of Benezé, perhaps somebody who's comfortable both at wide and is capable of cutting in field and making plays and scoring goals. I think that secondary scoring element was something that they talked a lot about heading into the offseason, in terms of that's where it was that they really wanted to see some value. And, you know, it's, when you have Jozy Altidore as your talisman up top, it's really hard to invest DP money in somebody who's going to be a backup for him. But I'd definitely be looking at them to add something in that forward depth department as well, whether that's, you know, another Patrick Mullins type addition, or somebody a little bit younger from inside the clubhouse right now that's shown some things.
You mentioned Ashton Morgan, of course, the longest serving TFC member appears to not be getting back this time. The nine lives have run out, I guess. Unfortunate for Ashton, but an opportunity might open up there. What's in the pipeline? You pay a lot of attention to the academy, more than pretty much anyone else. Is there anything in the academy, and not in particularly at left back, but out there that might make a jump up and join Rocco in signing a homegrown contract in the days ahead?
Yeah, there's a bunch of guys that I've sort of had my eye on that I think have gotten as much as they can out of the USL League One level and are ready for something a little bit bigger, whether that's here at TFC or whether that's a loan to a CPL club. Funnily enough, there is actually a left back that I know they're pretty high on. The question is whether he's necessarily ready to make this step up. I'm not sure if you recall, but a couple of years ago, Greg Vanney sort of let slip about a 15-year-old that he was really excited in, that was going to be joining the team down in California for this preseason part. And it's not uncommon for academy guys to be joining the first team this time of year, as I mentioned earlier. And then Tariq Mohammed, he's a left back. He's about as fierce of a competitor as you can see out there on the pitch. He's one of those guys that straddles the line between under control and borderline red card every moment of the game. And I've seen him get under the skin of the opponent and let the opponent get under his skin. And so he's just one of those guys that's electric out there. And it's all about, for him, the next challenge is going to be harnessing all of that energy and that determination that he has and putting it to the use of the team rather than as something that's potentially a liability. So he's a guy that I sort of have my eyes on. I think up top, if they're looking to add a little bit of depth, Jordan Perutz is a guy who since he joined TFC2, you know, midway through the 2018 season, I think he came home from some time in Italy. He's a Toronto boy, but he was playing, I believe it was with Perugia before returning to TFC2. Scored a boatload of goals last year, just a deadly finisher. You give him a half a yard in the box and he's going to find the back of the net. I think he had 15 or 16 goals last year and was up there competing with North Texas for a golden boot spot with the way the season played out. And he's a fascinating player as well. He's got a big body, but he's nowhere near as big as Jozy. Jozy's his own man in that regard. But Jordan's got enough size where he could potentially fill that role, perhaps a little bit less engaged than Jozy is in terms of constantly battling with the center backs, more of the kind of guy that defenders tend to lose track of and that finds his spaces to do damage, but a guy that I'm keeping an eye on. And I think aside from that, you know, Rocco was a guy that we had our eyes on, and it was a position that TFC sort of needed. They have a lot of central midfielders that are pretty impressive. Luca Uccello is making his return to TFC2 after spending last season in USL with Memphis, and there's a number of candidates there, but I just don't see, with how deep the TFC midfield is, that there's necessarily a spot there. The one other position would be in those winger slots. You know, we saw Jacob Schaffelberg come up after a brief stint with TFC2 last year, and we saw what he could do. And there are a number of other guys in a similar mold to that. And I know the club is very high on Jordan Faria, who tends to play on the left, and Luca Petrasso, whose brother Michael appears to be returning to Ontario to continue his professional career in the CPL. They're both wide players that have some size and some trickery. Luca's a little bit bigger than Jordan, but they're both promising prospects, to say the least. And And then, you know, we get into the whole Jaden Nelson and Jaquale Marshall Ruddy thing. And you know, Jaden, the last 8 months have been spectacular for him. I spoke to him before he went to the U-17 World Cup down in Brazil. And even though that didn't go particularly well for Canada, he's a player that really sort of distinguished himself and looked particularly lively in his TFC2 appearances last year and then made his national team debut just earlier this month. And so he's another guy that I expect to be joining the first team sooner rather than later. And, you know, you and I were talking about Jaquale just a couple of days ago, and I think he's only 15 right now, but he's a player with a great mind and vision for the game. I haven't seen as much of him as I would have liked, but everything that I hear about him is that he's a player who excels within the team's game plan, and those kind of guys that put the team first and always make the right decision are just invaluable.
And just so the listeners know, he was called the best 2004 in North America to me by an American observer, so not a Canadian, no bias there. At any rate, we'll see. A lot of pressure on a 15-year-old. But we'll wrap up with this, James. Thanks for your time today up at training. I know you had some bus problems today, but that's just Toronto. Julian Gressel traded to DC United today for allocation. That sort of changes the pecking order a bit in the East, I would think. It's really, really early. That's the caveat. But you think, I think, so do you agree with me that TFC should be considered among the favorites in the East right now?
Yeah, one of my questions that I had on my question sheet before everything went down yesterday was sort of how TFC sees the Eastern Conference shaping up. And you know, considering that it's been a pretty strong conference the last couple of years, we got a lot of new coaches. We got a lot of moving pieces. We have Atlanta, you know, losing Gressel today. We have, you know, a new coach with NYCFC. We have, you know, the Red Bulls sort of still figuring themselves out and you know, moving on from Robles and Bradley Wright Phillips. And, you know, we have some expansion teams in Miami that nobody knows what they're going to look like. And Cincinnati has to be better than they were last year, but who knows? And, you know, Columbus has done some serious reinforcement, but in Chicago is basically cleaned house and hasn't really done a whole lot since then. So it's very much the East is very much wide open. There's a lot of uncertainty, and you contrast all of those question marks with just the surety that this group at TFC has, both in themselves and in their ability to sort of go out there and execute a game plan and do what it takes to win. And that's one of the reasons why I got the sense of a quiet confidence yesterday when we first saw the guys out there on the field. There was an element that they were just looking to pick back up where they left off last year. And of course they were disappointed to lose that at that final hurdle. But I think, you know, we saw a certain grittiness and a toughness in last year's team that made it through that grueling playoff stretch that we didn't necessarily see with the 2017 team, where they were just sheer dominance over other teams. And sometimes that's what you need to find ways to win, especially in these knockout playoff games. These one-off games are a beast of their own. So, yeah, I'd put them up there, but, you know, we still got, about 5-6 weeks until the season starts, and there's a lot of different things that can happen. And then, of course, the West is looking pretty combative this year. So it'll be a fun season. I'm very much looking forward to it kicking off.
5 weeks. Anyway, I'm looking out of the snow right now. Can it hurry up? James Grassi, MLS Soccer, MLSsoccer.com, and other places too. James, thanks for your time today.
Anytime, Dave. Anytime.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. While I'm recovering from my surgery, of course, later today we'll start our SPN Extra Tier to Solitude Soccer podcast. All our premium podcasts will be coming out the next few days on our Patreon page. You can go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork to get the Two Solitude Soccer podcast for $2 a month, SPN Extra for $5, and the documentary tier for $10. Also, later today, Dwayne, there is a Canadian soccer press conference call with the women's national team heading into the CONCACAF Olympic qualifier. Both of us will be recording this press conference later today. and it will be up for Patreons also later this afternoon. But Dwayne, we're back. You know, we haven't done a show Friday, Monday. There was no way I could do a show. I was able to talk a little bit, and tomorrow, hopefully, I can look good enough to be on TV, and maybe my swollen face will come down a bit for tomorrow's show.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's weird to not go a few days when you do a daily show. You're like, I have so much to say. How do people do it weekly? I need to talk hourly. Can we do an hourly show?
Oh, my God.
No.
No, thank you. No, thank you. But Julian Gressel. Yeah, Julian Gressel being traded to DC United from Atlanta for allocation money is an interesting story. It's breaking story an hour ago by Stephen Goff, of course, of the Washington Post. So that will be a fascinating, I think, domino effect on the rest of the transactions and free agency and player movement across Major League Soccer. He was one of the biggest pieces that was available, or at least his negotiations with Atlanta were not going well. We didn't necessarily expect a trade, but it is what it is. And it might be a domino effect with other trades or roster or player signings across the Eastern Conference, at least.
Yeah, Gressel was a big name that had to fall. He didn't really fit in with the way Atlanta wanted to play, but he, if you look at his numbers, you look at his abilities on the pitch, he was basically the best value in Major League Soccer over the last couple of years. And I don't know, Atlanta has a lot of money and they have a lot of direction and they seem to know what they're doing down there. So I suspect they'll be okay, but this is a hit for them. And it is definitely a boost for DC. And it does fit their mold too, where I think DC is going to look to try and add another attacking piece up top, and they need a guy to support that. And if they do the right moves there, I think they could be a very dangerous team. They had a weird year last year with Costa's kind of bitter about the PSG thing all year and not really playing up to what he did in the last half of the second year and not taking full advantage of Rooney. So I think this is really a smart, savvy move by them. But as James said, there's not a lot of certainty in the East right now. That's why, you know, if I was picking today, I am inclined to pick TFC to win the East. And that's, or New York City SC, it would be the other one I would put in there. But of course, they have a coaching change to deal with. But it's that stability. And we've talked about this a lot of times in the past, that as much as it's nice to add new pieces, you'd rather have pieces already there that you know that you can trust when you're in Major League Soccer. That's how you should handicap. And we'll see. But I do like this move for DC. I think it is really effective. And it's a wide open side. It really is. I would have to think that if you're any one of five or six teams in the East, you would look at it and say, if I just add the right piece, I could be right there. We could be an MLS Cup next year. There is no dominant team. There is no Seattle or LAFC or even the Galaxy with Chicharito, which is official now, there ready to say that we're going to be dominant here. I don't know what we've talked about Chicharito already. I tend to lean more towards this might be a bust, but nonetheless, you can see that working out too.
Chicharito 4 years ago would have been an amazing player, but I also believe Zlatan would not have the influence on games like he did, and he did score a bunch of goals while he was here, so maybe there is something to it. Maybe the level of Chicharito might be high enough that he is having a good season, but it is a signing that is not just made for on the pitch, it's also made for off the pitch, jersey kits, sells, and of course, season tickets being sold today like crazy, probably, for the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. The Galaxy's Spanish language account gained like 10,000 followers in the last 2 days. Like, yeah.
10,000 followers in the world of MLS is a lot. So there you go.
So, exactly. Look, what I just said about the East, how stability is how you should stabilize, should give you every indication of who I would pick in the East right now, or the West right now.
LAFC?
It'd be LAFC. LAFC is the favorite to win MLS Cup right now, period, end of story.
Seattle's second.
Well, Seattle's a weird one. Seattle and Toronto are very similar in my mind at how you have to evaluate them. You know, they might not necessarily dominate in this regular season, but they're both teams that at the end of the year, like, are you really going to pick against them in the playoffs?
Really? You've seen them, exactly, the experience. But it is all interesting stories. And on that note, we'll say goodbye for today. I'll go take more pain medication, go back on my couch, and hopefully be good to go for tomorrow. If nothing else happened, you can find breaking news audio on our Patreon page. Later today, once again, we'll have the Canadian Women's National Team press conference call for patrons only on our website, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. And you can always find the podcast version on sportspodcastingnetwork.com. Until tomorrow, as always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larme, this show at Soccer Today, SPN. Thanks to James Grossi of MLSsoccer.com and other places also for his time today. And until tomorrow, as always, take care of your teeth. Do not be afraid to go to the dentist and have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.